Guantanamo Bay is a U.S. military enclave in territory that it has taken from Cuba. It is Cuban territory, as recognized by the U.S., but the presence there is against the will of the Cuban people, and we demand for that base to be removed from it. Now, its use for housing criminals, as is done for many years, its use for taking migrants and putting them there, we also reject it because of the inhuman treatment that they receive, but also because a great amount of individuals housed there by the U.S. government or imprisoned there, it's a danger to peace. That is a highly militarized zone. It's a danger for peace and tranquility in Cuba and for the countries of the region.
Could Cubans be deported from the United States to Guantanamo?
Well, not from the U.S. government. It seems that they think that they can do anything. I don't know if they have deported any Cuban to the base in Guantanamo. We know that they are deporting Cubans to Cuba on regular flights, but we don't know of any Cuba that has reached there.
We just have 20 seconds. We started with the embargo. Let's end the sanctions. What's the actual effect on people of Cuba?
It's a huge effect. It influences daily life, the standard of living, the tranquility, the peace of people, and it is the aim of these coercive measures, to make life as difficult as possible for the Cuban people so that they can have political goals.
Carlos Fernandez de Cossío, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Cuba's deputy foreign minister. We'll be doing an interview in Spanish and posting it online at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
What do we mean when we talk about personality?
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Strike for Our Rights, presenting a screening of the documentary Union on June 23rd at the Clinton Street Theater. The film chronicles the efforts of a group of warehouse workers as they launch a grassroots union campaign at an Amazon fulfillment center. All proceeds go to the Strike for Our Rights Strike Fund. Tickets and info at cstpdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, this Thursday is Juneteenth, the national day that commemorates the emancipation of enslaved people in the U.S. Thousands of Portlanders showed up for the No Kings March last weekend, and hundreds to the ICE protest. And in international news, Israel and Iran attack each other. Good evening. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. Juneteenth, the national holiday commemorating the emancipation of enslaved people in the U.S., is officially celebrated this Thursday, June 19th, 2025. The City of Portland and local residents will extend the celebration through Saturday, June 21st, with a festival, live music, food vendors, and community joy, the day beginning with the Clara People's Freedom Trail Parade at King Elementary School, 4906 Northeast 6th in Portland. The parade starts at 11 a.m. The fun begins at 9:30 a.m. as parade marchers are encouraged to gather at the back of the school. The parade route travels roughly 2 miles through North and Northeast Portland and ends at Lillis Albina Park at the cross streets of North Flint Avenue and North Russell. The event is going to happen come rain or come shine and is free to everyone. In a move bordering on precognition, Oregon state lawmakers approved a measure late last week making it harder for members of the public to obtain their home addresses. The bipartisan vote in favor of Senate Bill 224 was independent of weekend events in which a gunman murdered one Minnesota state lawmaker at her home and shot another. The vote does highlight a growing concern about political violence in an era of deep political division in the United States. Democratic Senator James Manning testified earlier in favor of the measure. Manning said, quote, "Information is so readily available on the Secretary of State website, I myself have been doxxed," end quote. He noted his home address was widely available on social media and that messages were posted urging people to visit his home. The bill makes it harder to access home addresses for a wide range of elected officials, including city councilors, school board members, and judges. To obtain the information, a person seeking it would need to submit a public records request. Some of the information is currently readily available on the Secretary of State's website. The Minnesota events clearly scared some elected officials. Lawmakers from both political parties decried the political violence. Senator Jeff Golden, a Democrat from Ashland, said going forward, he would be sure to distinguish between criticizing a proposal versus the person who is backing the measure. He said, quote, "To make sure that my passion is directed towards the substance of the proposal and not the character of the person proposing. I do think it can be a thin line. I probably have crossed it one time or another, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can not to do it again," end quote. Senate Republican leader Daniel Bonham, a Republican from the Dalles, made a similar point, saying acts of political violence should serve as a wake-up call. He asked Americans of all political backgrounds to, quote, "find common ground and ratchet down extreme hyperpartisan rhetoric." After the peaceful rally of 50,000 people, 18,000 marched a 3.2-mile route snaking through downtown and across both Hawthorne and Morrison bridges. On the way, the east-going column crossing the Hawthorne Bridge could see the west-going marchers heading back to the Battleship Monument area for a concluding rally. Alan Niven has more on the story.
I'm Alan Niven reporting from Portland, Oregon for KBOO Radio and the Pacifica Broadcast Network.
To those who are nervous to protest, know this. I am here with both of my kids today. There is space for you in this movement too. We are stronger when we all come together. In fact, it is our responsibility to unite for the safety and well-being of our neighbors. To our immigrant neighbors, to our immigrant communities who do not feel safe on the streets with us, I see your fear. I share your anger. I stand with you, and I will do everything I can as your city councilor to keep Portland safe for you and for your families. I believe in the strength and resilience of Portlanders. I believe we have the patience, we have the fortitude for nonviolent resistance. We are not a city that buckles under pressure. We stand together when the stakes are high. Thank you for standing together today for our community, for our city, and for our country.
To all the trans people that are here today, I see you. And the only reason that they hate us is because they cannot imagine or understand the magnificence of our creation.
I am a proud member of a growing community of clowns here in Portland who believe that joy is sacred and that it is our duty to defend it. Now, I know a lot of fucks showed up today with signs and chants along the lines of "Trump is a clown." Trump is not a clown. Let's not use this archetype to potentially trivialize the very real harm he's inflicting right now. He is a fascist, a tyrant, and a serious threat to any hope we have left for a democracy. He clearly does not possess a heart as he works to sow division and chaos, numb our instinct to resist, and attempts to manufacture consent in order to justify violence against us. But our choice to gather in gleeful opposition is a strategic satire. We clowns do not serve empire. We mock it. We unmask it. We serve to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. We do not act out to distract from evil. We use absurdity to expose it. If our country is becoming a warmongering circus, then it is time for us to take back the ring. We all showed up today not to make light of this moment, but because joy, art, rage, grief, and connection are the lifelines back to our humanity. They are our refusal to let fear, despair, and apathy steal the final act. We are not just gathering to move against Trump's injustices today. We're also coming together to imagine the world we actually want to live in. Not a stage up in flames mismanaged by a strong-arming wannabe dictator, but a boundless, messy, playful world full of softness, growth, sincerity, and vibrant, thriving communities. A world where care is louder than cruelty. Where no one gets thrown away. And where joy is not a luxury, it is a right. Be brave enough to look ridiculous defending what you love. But let's not give Trump and his lackeys any undue credit. We do not claim them. We clowns have always been for the people. We are here to aid in tearing down the thrones of tyranny and to raise a spectacular new world together. Thank you.
I'm Alan Niven reporting from Portland, Oregon for KBOO Radio and the Pacifica Broadcast Network.
A variety of protests have happened over the last week. The No Kings protest and ongoing protests against the Portland ICE facility. Anna Wilcox has more on the story.
Widespread demonstrations against the Trump administration took place in Portland last week. The largest was the No Kings rally on Saturday. Thousands of people gathered near the Battleship Memorial at the Tomahawk Waterfront Park. Overall, demonstrations have been largely peaceful, with pointed moments of tension. Demonstrations in front of the Portland Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, facility downtown started earlier this month. On Thursday, three grassroots advocacy groups held a rally in front of the building in protest of the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Dozens of people gathered. KBOO talked with Holly Brown, an organizer who spoke on behalf of Portland Contra las Deportaciones, an organization that advocates for immigrant rights in the city.
I'm really looking for this to be an empowering day where people are able to share their voices and stand up with people who are under attack.
Organizer Omar also shared.
On a personal level, my parents are immigrants. I have a large community back home in Southern California of immigrants. I mean, it defines me. Everyone's rights are being violated. People are being violently pulled apart from their families. And what we're seeing in Los Angeles is really disturbing.
The rally was mostly peaceful. People held signs and shouted chants. Volunteers directed traffic. People passed out water bottles and masks. KBOO asked people what brought them here.
I'm here today because people who are imprisoned in the land of the free makes it unsafe for all of us in any land that becomes not free. We need to fight for Palestine, we need to fight for Ukraine, and we need to fight for every person who is imprisoned in this concentration space right here in Portland. I would want somebody to fight for me and for my children, and I will stand here to fight for others.
I'm here because I am a member of a community, and living in this community, we all have to look out for each other, and I'm not going to stand by while my next-door neighbors, the people who live in my state, are disappearing before my eyes and being kidnapped.
The tenor changed temporarily not long after the rally began. Officers in brown uniforms marked police opened up the gates blocking the driveway into the ICE building. To clear demonstrators out of the driveway, officers used pepper bullets. Friday morning, the Portland Police Bureau announced the arrest of 10 individuals at the facility for activities related to disorderly conduct, arson, and attempted assault of a public safety officer, and other allegations that took place overnight. On Saturday night, Portland police declared a riot at the facility after some individuals broke the glass door into the facility. Portland police arrested 3 individuals. Demonstrators who have occupied the space around the ICE Center have faced pepper bullets on multiple occasions. Some demonstrators told KABU that they experienced injuries related to pepper bullets and also leg shackles that were too tight. One demonstrator said they were detained by Homeland Security earlier this month. They told KABU they were placed in leg shackles tight enough to leave bruises.
They put leg irons on us, so now our feet and our hands are tied together, even though we're not under arrest. And they tell him that they're going to take his braids out, which is against almost every tribe. That's against their culture, big time. And then they came over and ripped my indigenous earrings out, which is also very much so against our culture. I'm a veteran. I served in Desert Storm. I took an oath to a constitution, and Portland has proven to me over and over again in these last 10 years that the constitution absolutely does not exist for us.
An EMT serving as a medic during the demonstration said they were shot with mace. They also said that one individual needed care for excessive exposure to mace.
We've had a lot of really, really brutal injuries here over the past week. On Tuesday evening, ICE came out of the building at random, spraying people with mace, pepperballing people in the face. They were shooting at medics. They shot at me. I'm EMT.
This segment is part of ongoing reporting. Continue to tune in for more detailed coverage. This is Anna Wilcox with KBOO Portland.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kabu.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on a petition to revoke the Immigration and Customs Enforcement permit to operate in Portland. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be a high of 80 degrees and a low of 58 degrees. And tomorrow it will be a high of 71 degrees and a low of 53 degrees. Today in history, in 1944, Iceland becomes a republic. The quote of the day is from Lao Tzu, who said, quote, "He who knows that enough is enough will always have enough." Political tensions rise after Minnesota assassinations. Trump's DOJ demands sweeping election data from Colorado. Advocates mark LGBTQIA pay inequity, and U.S. and U.K. reach a new trade deal. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There are always good bipartisan things that come out of any legislative session here in Minnesota. But yeah, I think unfortunately that work doesn't always attract the news headlines.
Jake Loesch of the Citizens League in Minnesota says cross-party cooperation is still possible, even as the state reels from what's probably the worst act of political violence in its history. Last weekend, Democratic Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband were shot and killed in their home. A state senator and his wife were also shot but survived. Authorities say the suspect intended to inflict fear and might have gone on to target other elected Democrats and abortion providers if not stopped. Vance Belter wore a silicone mask, impersonated a police officer, and had lists of names, maps, and surveillance logs in his car. Acting U.S. Attorney Joseph Thompson.
This was a political assassination, which is not a word we use very often in the United States, let alone here in Minnesota.
A separate politically motivated shooting at a No Kings rally in Salt Lake City might have been averted, but an innocent bystander was killed in the process. An armed guard spotted a man with a rifle running through the crowd and shot him, but also hit fashion designer Afa Alu. The work of Project Runway alum has been celebrated for honoring his Samoan heritage. Advocates say LGBTQ workers only get about 90 cents for every dollar a typical worker earns for the same work. and non-heterosexual women make even less. Deborah Vagans with Equal Rights Advocates says workplace protections are being hollowed out and the enforcement agencies are being gutted.
President Trump took the unprecedented action to fire officials at these independent agencies. He's laid off hundreds of staff. He has effectively undermined the enforcement protections, especially for LGBTQIA employees.
Election officials are watching a sweeping request from the Justice Department for voting records in Colorado. The DOJ Civil Rights Division is now led by a lawyer who worked on 2020 election denial cases and is now demanding all state documents, possibly including ballots from the last two presidential election years. Colorado's Secretary of State says the files could fill Mile High Stadium. President Donald Trump says he'll be leaving the G7 summit early because of the Iran-Israel conflict. But while in Canada, he and UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer unveiled a new tariff agreement to lower the import taxes on British cars and aircraft parts. Consumer advocates are warning about a growing tariff delay scam. Kristen Johnson with Connecticut's Better Business Bureau says scammers are telling consumers they have to pay phony fees to get their online orders.
So it's more believable because we're learning about the tariffs just now, but that's why we want people to take a step back and realize, no, the tariffs are not going to affect you on the back end after you've placed the order.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes recently received grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes recently received grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports, other housing-related funding for the tribes is a little less certain.
Tribes across the country receive federal support through the annual Indian Housing Block Grant. This year, the Eastern Shoshone Tribe got about $2.3 million, and the Northern Arapaho Tribe received about $3.6 million. Amarielle LeBeau is the director of the Northern Arapaho Housing Authority.
We get this block grant based on a formula, right? And so it's based off the unit and our need.
The money keeps housing authorities operating and helps maintain their current housing. Trump's proposed budget would decrease that funding by about 20%. An earlier draft also called for eliminating a competitive community development grant. Gilbert Ritchie is with the Eastern Shoshone Housing Authority and says losing that would have a direct impact on future projects.
That's the primary funding source for us to spearhead new housing development.
Congress is still in the process of reviewing the budget. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
Last month, President Trump announced plans to reopen and rebuild Alcatraz, one of America's most infamous prisons that was shut down six decades ago. For now, it's a federal historic landmark managed by the National Park Service. Several top leaders from the Bureau of Prisons, including engineers, recently toured Alcatraz to conduct site assessments. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the 22-acre island within the San Francisco Bay has strong ties to the Hopi tribe of Arizona.
First a pre-Civil War fort, then a military prison, this maximum security federal penitentiary housed some of the nation's most notorious inmates, from Al Capone to George Machine Gun Kelly. But Matthew Sakaiestawa, a history professor at the University of Arizona, says they all had one thing in common.
The federal government has always seen that island as a place to put problematic people, including a group of 19 Hopi men.
Some refer to them as the Hopi 19, hailing from the Pueblo village of Oribe, perched atop Third Mesa in the high desert of northern Arizona. The Hopis were charged with sedition after refusing to let their children attend Indian boarding schools. With no due process, since they were considered wards of the state, the then Commissioner of Indian Affairs sentenced the Hopi 19 to confinement in hard labor in 1895, nearly 1,000 miles away.
You will encounter steep walkways, uneven surfaces, and tripping hazards on Alcatraz Island. Please watch your step.
Right now, it's a park. This is a place for the public. I've taken the ferry boat trip there, less than 2 miles from the shore, and you can learn about this native history.
Sakaiestawa, who is Hopi, says Alcatraz Island is also a political symbol.
Whether that's federal government's perspective or also from indigenous people.
And for President Donald Trump, Alcatraz is not only a symbol of law and order.
It's a big hulk that's sitting there rusting and rotting, but it sort of represents something that's both horrible and beautiful and strong and miserable, weak.
Tune in tomorrow for part two of the series on Alcatraz's ties to the Hopi. And on this day in 1876, the Battle of the Rosebud took place in eastern Montana between 4,000 Lakota Sioux warriors and General George Crook's troops. He lost 28 out of 1,300 men, but the greater disaster, the Battle of Little Bighorn, was 8 days away. I'm Brian Bull for National Native News.
President Trump seems to have tried the good cop, bad cop game with Iran, using Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's threat to attack in order to hasten a nuclear deal. Instead, Netanyahu has attacked in order to thwart the U.S.-Iran talks and finally resolve Israel's Iran problem. He has actually made it more likely than ever that Iran will develop and deploy nuclear weapons. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. In the lead-up to Israel's devastating attack on Iran's nuclear facilities and its military leadership, President Trump posed as a peacemaker and concerned bystander. He said that he much preferred a nuclear deal with Iran to war, but hinted that he might not be able to keep Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu from ordering a strike. Then Trump shifted on June 12th when asked about an Israeli strike. Quote, I don't want to say imminent, but it looks like it's something that could very well happen. No sooner did Israel's attacks come than Trump warned Iran, not Israel, accept U.S. terms for a nuclear deal or face, quote, even more brutal attacks. The meaning of this sequence of comments seems clear to me. Trump, the good cop, saw value in using Netanyahu, the bad cop, to force Iran, the victim, to plead for a deal. In the last few weeks, it seemed that conditions were ripe for a revival of a nuclear deal with Iran, one similar to the deal Trump discarded in his first administration. Iran was experiencing serious economic problems. Trump was determined to secure normalization of relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. The threat to Israel from Hamas, Hezbollah, and Syria had been greatly reduced. And the International Atomic Energy Agency's reports suggested that Iran was moving ahead on its uranium enrichment program. An IAEA resolution just the other day reinforced those reports, declaring that Iran was in breach of its nuclear obligations, citing, quote, undeclared nuclear material and activities, and failure to provide credible explanations. Unless and until Iran assists the agency in resolving the outstanding safeguards issue, the agency will not be in a position to provide assurance that Iran's nuclear program is exclusively peaceful, said the IAEA Director General. It now seems that all those conditions favoring dialogue with Iran became reasons for Israel to attack Iran. Secretary of State Marco Rubio was quick to dismiss the notion that the U.S. was involved in Israel's attack. Well, not directly involved, but most certainly the U.S. is a key party. Just a week or so ago, Trump claimed he stopped Netanyahu from ordering an attack on Iran. Trump also repeated his desire that Netanyahu end the war in Gaza. He could have warned Netanyahu again this time and backed the warning by saying that the U.S. would not help defend Israel from an Iranian retaliation. That unlike last October, when the U.S. provided defenses against Iran's missile and drone attack, Israel this time would be on its own. But Trump kept up the pose as a powerless outsider, hoping for a nuclear deal, but using Netanyahu to strengthen the U.S. bargaining position with Iran. In much the same way as in the Ukraine-Russia peace talks, Trump failed to close the deal he said he wanted. He talked peace, but did nothing to prevent war. He did not use the leverage the U.S. has with Israel to avoid a regional conflict and great loss of life. As Ali Vaez, director of the Iran program at the International Crisis Group, says, quote, I think that Israeli military pressure is aimed at achieving what U.S. economic pressure has not achieved, which is for Iran to give up its enrichment program. Once again, Netanyahu has outflanked Trump and undercut what remains of the peace forces in Israel. Faced with domestic and international pressure finally to halt military operations in Gaza, Netanyahu has responded in his usual way, more war. He has pulled the same stunt time and again, in the West Bank, in Lebanon, in Syria, and now in Iran. Ratchet up tensions, divert Israelis' attention from his failure to gain the release of hostages, and win the affection of the far right. Netanyahu claims to act in Israel's self-defense. If I don't attack Iran, Iran will get the bomb and obliterate us. His actual view, strongly supported by his far-right cabinet ministers, is that now is the perfect time to finish the job and eliminate Israel's Iran problem. Netanyahu has always opposed U.S. talks with Iran. These attacks, he hopes, will sabotage those nuclear talks with Iran. Furthermore, Israel's attacks seem to have been directed mainly at decapitating its military leadership rather than at totally destroying the nuclear capability. The list of key Iranian military figures killed in the first Israeli attacks suggests that Israel wants to undermine regime stability and accomplish what the U.S. has never been able to accomplish, regime change. Instead, Iran is likely to withdraw from the nuclear talks and rapidly move toward producing deliverable nuclear bombs. Now both sides seem uninterested in stopping the attacks on each other. All-out war is definitely a possibility. The only hope of stopping it is intervention by outside parties, perhaps Saudi Arabia and the other Arab states, or perhaps the European Union. In any case, they must act immediately. I'm Mel Gertal for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Day John, Anna Wilcox, John Nelson, and Alan Nivens. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Brian Bull, Farah Siddiqui, and Mel Gertov. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29. If you'd like to become a member and support